اذا انا عايش هون وراح اموت هون على قليل اموت وانا فخور بحالي وعارف مين انا كمان.
In Islam, being gay is an unspeakable crime. Omar made a film of his story. He wants a voice.
First and foremost, I am gay, who happens to be a person of color, who happens to be raised Muslim.
So what you just heard was the opening to a new film, a documentary made for Al Jazeera by our friend and guest, Edward Wyckoff Williams, who is a contributor to Al Jazeera America, also contributing editor to The Root, and of course, a columnist, political analyst, who appears on Al Jazeera, MSNBC, CNN, and many places, and joins us now. Welcome. Good to have you back with us, Edward.
A pleasure to be with you, Mark.
So that was a very poignant opening for this film you're doing for Al Jazeera, Gay and Muslim in America. And
yes,
a piece coming out soon you're going to be writing about, which we'll talk about as well. But so tell me how this happened. I mean, especially now we're in the end of Pride Week and the beginning of Ramadan, which we'll talk about in a second. But how did you come up with this idea? What were you looking for? How did this happen?
Well, when Al Jazeera first came to America a year ago and they brought me on, they asked me what ideas I had in terms of content, in particular long-form content. And, you know, I was muddling over a number of issues. I really wanted to look at poor Republicans in the South, particularly poor whites, and why they vote for the GOP, even though they're on welfare. That was one of the ideas that a lot of the producers and the execs liked. But they thought it was too, it might come off as too partisan because of the past that I've had in terms of my writing. So they wanted someone who wouldn't be so partisan, sort of fronting that. And this was one of the ideas that had no, you know, there was no partisan nature to it. It was, I am gay, but I'm not Muslim. And I thought that it was particularly poignant because in the American social consciousness, Al Jazeera is a Muslim organization, even though it is not. It is a news organization that happens to have an Arabic name that's based out of the Middle East. But it's really, for all intents and purposes, an unbiased news organization. And I think most people will know that. But I thought that since we're already coming from a perspective where, in a lot of ways, in the American consciousness, Al Jazeera represents the Muslim world from a news perspective, I thought it'd be really interesting to look at juxtaposing something alongside that people don't expect of Muslims. So if they expect anything, they would expect that the Islamic faith would be extremely intolerant of homosexuality. And there's good reason to believe that. And, you know, we'll talk about that as we talk through some of the things that I talked about with the imam. But putting that on television and having a conversation about being openly gay in Islam, I thought was something that has not been done in America, at least not on that level, you know, at having that kind of stage, an international stage with a network like Al Jazeera. And I was just fascinated by what is it like to be both gay and Muslim. And so it literally just grew quite organically. And that's how we came up with the idea. And they loved it. And they decided to back it.
So I'm wondering, when you hear Omar talk about that he tried to divorce himself from Islam because I was gay and how he was taught being gay was not okay. And how different did you feel the experience you learned from the people you interviewed is from the experience that others, yourself and other people, experience growing up in black homes or white homes?
Well, I think that there is certainly...
I say Christian Jewish homes, I should say. Sorry.
I think there's certainly... we share a lot in common because there is a, what I call this double consciousness that comes with being a dual minority. And I think before I even want to go too deep into that, I want to say that this was actually very difficult to do. Mark, I would set up shoots, pay for the camera crew, have producers ready to go, and the subjects that had agreed to do the interview literally would call at the last minute and cancel. That was my experience pretty much from the course of maybe about the end of November, December, when I first told you about this, until the first interview that we actually filmed, which was Omar's, which was in February. And you can actually see that from the video because I still have on
your winter coat.
Yeah, so it took like 3 to 4 months just to get someone on camera. To that end, because Omar's partner, who is also Muslim, did not really want to participate, we got to the apartment, and it became a big issue whether or not we were going to continue. I literally had to counsel people. I took months taking people out to drinks, befriending them, letting them get to a point where they knew that I was not going to exploit them or their stories. I was not going to put them in unsafe spaces. And I think that that is a journey. So when you get to the point where Omar is talking about his coming out and talking about how he's still not out to his parents, how he's in a relationship that's still, in a lot of ways, very closeted, that's a lived experience that's still happening. I think oftentimes when we see people in documentaries and they're talking and sharing, we assume that they're past the struggle, right, that they've gotten to that safe space and that happy place. And what's interesting about what you notice about these two characters is that that is not the truth
right.
for them, and that they've actually opened a door for us to share their lives. And I think for me, you know, I mean, you've been knowing me for years now in my work. This is new to me. This is a new space. And so it's quite humbling to be in a place where you get to a point where people literally who don't know you very well trust you with their stories in a lot of ways, very intimate aspects of their lives.
I'm going to play here kind of a very poignant piece, I thought, by Sarah, one of the two people you interviewed. Let's listen to this.
If someone said to me that being Muslim and gay was impossible, or they couldn't go together, I would ask them why they thought that. Reconciling my Islamic faith and my sexuality was pretty natural. I believe this idea that Allah has created people in the best form, and that Allah loves His creations.
Now, Edward, what we just heard was Sarah talking about how she felt there were no contradictions in this stuff about being an Islam and being a gay woman, being a lesbian, and also her idea that you have to develop some kind of radical queer politics to make the change. I mean, she's a very powerful young woman in terms of what she presented.
Oh, she is. I would want you to get her on the radio. I think that she has a career in social justice. She's quite centered, but as you can see as the story goes on with her, there's a lot there, and there's a lot of pain that lies underneath. In terms of the politics, though, and I think that it was a really key point that she made, she basically said that she wants to see queer Muslims galvanized around a progressive agenda, a progressive political agenda, in the same way that African Americans and civil rights has sort of engineered our progress in so many ways, to the point that we're now with a black president in the White House. And yes, that takes decades, if not centuries, in that particular case. But if we look at the gay rights movement, which has largely been driven by gay white men in this country, it has taken a real strategic effort. And I think what she wants to see in the Muslim community is a Muslim progressive agenda. And that is happening. I actually interviewed Ani Zonenveld, who is the head of Muslims for Progressive Values. She's
right.
not included in this part, but will be included in other aspects of the work, even though that interview has already been conducted. I think we might explore more with her. There are progressive Muslims that are forming organizations, even globally, because the Muslims for Progressive Values has actually just gotten a charter from the United Nations, and they're partnering with Muslim organizations across the world, not just across the country. And that's happening, but I think that what Sarah is talking about is that this is only happening in pockets, and it's very disjointed. And there's still an underground aspect to the queer Muslim movement. And in order to give it life and in order to give it the kind of structure that it needs to be successful, you need some sort of radical, almost like what we saw with the Occupy movement. You need sort of a really radical movement in order to sort of stage itself and then to take root.
So in thinking about that, there's a tad longer piece I want to play to show the contradictions that you raised, that were raised in this, and that I think you're talking about now. But let's hear it in the words of this imam and the conflicts we hear from Islam.
Mm-hmm.
They are part of the community. They are the people of the Qibla, so they can come to the mosque. homosexuality, it is something considered to be contradicting the system.
The system of the family?
The system of Islam. It is very difficult for me to say that someone was born gay.
Now, Edward, that imam you interviewed, we just heard. I mean, he, you know, on the one hand, he's saying everybody's welcome. On the other hand, he's saying, oh, but this is, you know, not in the Quran. It's not right. So
yeah, I mean, he literally said it is a crime.
A crime, right.
You know, what the edited bits that they got out, because that interview was over an hour long. We only used, what, like a minute of him?
Right.
He started off extremely trying his best to be progressive and open-minded. And I questioned him about, what would you say to a 16-year-old boy who comes to you and says he has gay feelings? What would you say to his parents? And he struggled at first, but he ultimately came down on the side of right and righteousness and basically said, of course I would tell parents not to disown their children. Love is all that matters. Love is what's most important. But that said, this is still a crime in Islam. There's no place for homosexuality in Islam. And from his perspective, conversion was the only answer. That's ultimately where he came down to. That's not included, but he ultimately said they should come to the mosque. The mosque is always open because eventually they will see the error of that way, and they will choose another way. And to that end, I think it was a great juxtaposition for Sarah's story and Omar's story, because you see that that is perhaps one of the most progressive voices in the faith. This man is in New York. He's not in the Middle East. He's not in Africa. He is literally here in New York City. He is the imam of the largest mosque in New York, the most international mosque probably in the country. And he's still on the side that this is something that people need to be converted from. Omar actually was interested in going and meeting with the imam. We considered filming that. We ended up not doing it. We might do it in the future. But I think that the way these conversations are occurring is that they're occurring in a vacuum. They're occurring in bubbles. And so a part of what we're trying to do with Gay and Muslim in America with this work and eventually with the long-form documentary is to create a narrative and a space, a safe space, where these conversations can happen together.
Because, I mean, it is very dangerous. Let me play this final clip as we talk over this in the last 5 or 6 minutes of our conversation. This is Sarah and Omar both speaking.
Being Muslim, it's not safe to be gay sometimes. So if you're not there yet with your surroundings to be open and feel like your life is safe, I would not tell a 16-year-old to just come out of the closet just like that.
What I would like to see is a Muslim community galvanized along a very like radical queer politics to do more like grassroots movement building to say we want our spaces to be safer.
And Edward, when you hear Omar in this last clip say that with almost the fear of advising any 16-year-old to come out, because their life would be in danger. That's very serious.
It is very serious. And we're talking about Muslims here in the U.S. You know, this is something that's
right,
underreported,
right.
And I don't want to make too fine a point on it, but there is a culture, particularly since a lot of the Muslims in this country are immigrants, and so they're bringing the cult, and Omar spoke about this, that we're here, but our culture is still with us, right? And so a lot of people bring from Pakistan or wherever. Omar is a Pakistani-American. Wherever they're coming from, they're bringing that culture. And there is a culture of honor killings. There's a culture of real violence against people who are homosexuals. And I think that to that end, Omar was basically trying to warn young people. He's saying, I want you to hear my story. I want you to know my truth. And I want you to, I guess, hope one day that you too can live out yours. But you still must be wise. And he even spoke of 16, 17-year-old kids when he was still very young, who did come out to their parents, and it's a part of what took him so long to come out in his own personal life, is that he saw those kids disowned. He saw people put out of their homes and having to make their own way. And that's, that's really sad to say that that's occurring in 21st century America. But that happens. It still happens. And I think it doesn't just happen in Muslim communities. It happens across the country, across races, across religions. But I think particularly in this religion, it's something that isn't discussed. And so it's happening but not discussed. And to that end, I think we need to shine light on the real stories and sometimes horror stories, sad stories, painful stories that people are trying to survive and live through.
I mean, and I think it's so interesting to hear Sarah here again, because she's really trying to hold on to her faith as a Muslim woman,
yeah,
while believing that Allah would treat her any like he would treat anybody else as a lesbian. Like, you can see her struggle just in the choking up of her voice and just her eyes as she speaks.
Yes, it's really interesting, and the juxtaposition there too. Is that Omar pretty much considers himself an atheist now.
Uh-huh. Right.
He feels like he had to leave the faith in order to be gay. He genuinely, even though he is hopeful, he doesn't have enough faith in the faith community, not in the actual faith itself. He believes in Allah, and he believes that Allah is good and all that and righteous, but he doesn't believe in his community enough to accept him without harming him. Where Sarah is one of the, she's like an old black woman in the South to me, like on the plantation who's still praying and believing. Like, genuinely believes, and she still prays, she still reads the Quran. She doesn't wear the hijab, that's a personal choice, but she's still very much a sort of a observant Muslim. And to that end, when we talk about her estrangement, obviously you see that emotion. And you can feel it. I mean, it was in that clip, I was crying. Like, we ended up stopping the cameras because she and I broke down and cried. And there's more to her story that I can't share now, but which has a lot to do with the abuse when she was a child. But she's still struggling with the fact that she genuinely has enough faith to believe that she will be reunited with her family. But yet, in her mind, and I think you can see as you watch her, she's still not sure either. She thinks that this might just be a done deal. Like, she's had to create an entire new life for herself without, like, she has 5 siblings that she's not spoken to in 6 years. I think almost, no, 7 years. Mm. In 7 years, she's not spoken to her younger siblings, and she is the eldest child. There's a lot of pain there. She described her mother as being her best friend, and this is now a mother that she's completely estranged from. There's just so much, and this is a real lived experience, I would say, for a lot of young gay Muslims.
So, very quickly towards the end here, Edward, you have an article coming out about this as well, right?
Yes, and the article, obviously, you guys will have it as soon as it's published on Al Jazeera's website, alongside this first part, because this first part, which they sort of subtitled Standing Out,
right,
is just the beginning of a series that we're doing. So that article will come out, and you guys will have that. GLAAD is also going to be help pushing this with our partners, Out Magazine and The Advocate and The Guardian. So we're hoping to sort of build momentum and start to tell these stories.
Well, the story has to be told, and I think that this is a wonderful beginning, and I really look forward to this kind of entire documentary as you finish it. I think that the what is it, 10 minutes on the air now that you can see, is amazing to watch, to feel these two young people wrestling with their world and looking forward to hearing how this unfolds, because there is a whole world here, not just in the U.S., but across the globe, with gay and lesbians who are Muslim. And I think this is an important contribution to all these discussions.
And what's so interesting, Mark, and you probably already know this, is that I think in Egypt there was, and you people can watch this on YouTube, a documentary called A Jihad for Love, which was about the plight of homosexuals in the Muslim world. This is a few years old now, maybe 2009 or something like that. And one of the things I thought was so fascinating is the risk that those documentarians took to do that. How is it that that has not yet been done in the States? How is it that we live in the most open, most liberal, most progressive society, or so we think, but yet we aren't having those conversations? And that's also a part of what drew me to this. And I'm glad that Al Jazeera is willing to back it.
And we will be linking to all of this, of course, at steinershow.org, so you can see it. And then as the article comes out, we'll promote that on the air here on the Mark Steiner Show as soon as it does come out, and be linking to all of that as well. And Edward Wyckoff Williams, who is expanding his reach here, working for Al Jazeera America, producing this incredible, being this documentary on being gay and Muslim in America, also contributing editors to The Root and a columnist and political analyst on many, many many broadcast mediums. Edward Wyckoff Williams, thank you so much for this piece, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com.